All right, Alexander, we have got to talk about, let me try to get this one right, Germany, Russia, Merkel, Putin, Navalny, poisoning, Novichok, Nord Stream 2. If it's a go, if she's going to pull out, Merkel and Germany's going to pull out. This whole Germany, Russia, Navalny, Nord Stream 2 thing has gotten so complicated, so intertwined. It's really become a mess. And we've got more news now coming out. We even have breaking news that the Russian authorities may know, at least we're getting that from the Russian media, who did this. There's just a lot of stuff going on all levels, geopolitical, yes, political, yeah, economic, energy, and even a type of manhunt or womanhunt in this case, yeah, for a suspicious character in this whole Navalny, Nord Stream 2, Russia, Germany, yeah, story. Alexander, untangle this thing a little bit for us.
As you're absolutely right, you say, it makes the head spin, and it's becoming very difficult to keep up with stories and innuendos and rumors and constant changes of position. I want to make one thing absolutely clear. The confusion comes from Germany. I mean, when the Russians had Navalny in the hospital at Omsk, it's now accepted that the doctors there saved his life. Even the German media has accepted this, that the doctors saved his life. They came up with toxicological data, which was accepted, that, you know, he wasn't poisoned. And it seemed as if, you know, this was going to be a straightforward affair. Then Navalny was sent to Germany. Then we got all these reports that he was poisoned with Novichok. But the Germans have refused to provide the data to the Russians. And we've had all this extraordinary mystery going on about whether they would. The German foreign minister, Heiko Maas, was saying at one time that they would. And then they did a U-turn, and then they said that they wouldn't, and that they provided to the OPCW instead. And then the OPCW said, well, actually, we haven't had any data from the Germans at all, so we don't know what the Germans are talking about. And then we had another report that actually the OPCW had been provided with all this data, and they'd gone to the hospital, the Charité Hospital and the German laboratory, and had been provided it. So we're getting all of these discordant stories and rumours and speculations going on about what's going on with Navalny. And, you know, it's all very confused, because the Germans don't tell a single clear story. And I would add that there's now been a complaint from the Russian foreign ministry to the Germans, in which they said, can we please have one person from now on talking about this? Because we have so many different German officials and German spokesmen saying different things that we don't understand any longer what the German position actually is. Now, on top of that, we now hear that there are reports, and there are reports both in Germany, but primarily in Russia, that Merkel has been trying to speak to Putin for about the last 10 days, and that she wants to discuss, well, who knows what, but it's obviously about Navalny, but we don't know quite what she's trying to get him to discuss. But he is refusing to speak to her. And he says that he won't speak to her at all until the Germans do that which the German foreign minister, Mr. Maas, said they would do, which is hand over all the data to the Russians. Now, then something even weirder happened, which is that the Germans seem to have got the Italian prime minister, Mr. Conte, to come along and say that when he spoke to Putin, which he did some time ago in connection with the Belarus thing, Putin promised him that there was going to be that the Russians were setting up a commission of inquiry to look into the whole Navalny thing. And then, of course, the Russians immediately denied that story. And they said they didn't understand what Conte was talking about, because Putin never said any such thing. So you see, we have total chaos and total muddle and total confusion. Now, there are many different possibilities here. Possibility one, Navalny was poisoned in Russia, and someone in Russia, either the doctors in Omsk didn't detect the poison. I mean, Omsk is a, you know, it's a big city in Russia, a big industrial city. They build aircraft engines and tanks and all kinds of things there. But perhaps it's not the biggest center in Russia. They did apparently send samples to laboratories in Moscow. But, you know, maybe they missed the sign of the poisoning. Maybe somebody was covering up. I'm not, you know, going to assume anything on that front. Another possibility, maybe the Germans are lying. And the fact is that they don't really want to release the data because they're unsure about the data themselves. And they fear that if the data was sent to Russia, the Russians would be able to demolish or refute it. It's a real possibility. And it would explain some of the German moves. Third possibility is that he was actually poisoned, not in Omsk, and that it was perhaps a diabetic attack or something of that nature, but that he was poisoned in transit to Germany. And this is where I think the story about this mysterious individual comes in, because it seems that the Russian police have now been able to track every movement that Navalny made in the days leading up to his illness. They've spoken to everybody involved. They've been to every restaurant, every cafe. They know all the drinks he had. They know all the food he ate. They know absolutely everything. The only person who is missing is this one individual who has now disappeared. She took a flight to Germany. She's a permanent British resident, which I presume means that she has some kind of British travel documents, though apparently she is Russian, but there we go. And she is connected in some way with Khodorkovsky. The Russians are trying to get hold of this person, but the likelihood is they never will. So again, an air of mystery and intrigue about the whole Navalny thing, which is completely unacceptable. Now, it's perfectly obvious to me what should happen. Firstly, the Russian doctors and the German doctors should get together and compare notes and try to establish what really has happened to this man. First of all, if both doctors, sets of doctors, are telling the truth, then you can arrive at certain conclusions about when Navalny was poisoned. It might not have been on the flight from Tomsk. So that's one thing to, you know, bear in mind. I'm not saying that's what happened, but that, it seems to me, is an obvious first step. And then, of course, we need the toxicological data. And, you know, involving the OPCW at this stage seems to me premature and a way, basically, especially given what we know about the OPCW, to avoid giving the Russians the data. So we're now in this weird situation where the Germans are saying completely different things about Navalny. And at the same time, they're not providing the Russians with the data. And at the same time, they are insisting that the Russians open some kind of criminal probe without providing the Russians with the evidence upon which that probe was based. Now, overarching all of this is the question of what to do about Nord Stream 2, because this is really, it's now all become connected to this. Now, a few days ago, when this all started, Merkel came along, said Nord Stream 2 is a purely commercial project. There is no connection with Navalny whatsoever. It will go on regardless of whether Navalny was or wasn't poisoned. That's what she said. The following day, the German doctors say he was poisoned. And then we heard that it was supposedly Novichok. And Merkel falls silent. There is a tremendous outcry in Germany. All the Atlanticist elements there start campaigning to stop Nord Stream 2. It seems as if there is a drift towards doing that. Then there is a sort of pullback when German business and the Austrian government, which is also heavily involved in Nord Stream 2, start to say, well, hold on a moment, this is a commercial project. Why are we making it? Why are we sacrificing our own vital economic interests to Nord Stream, you know, to this whole Navalny business? We need to see Nord Stream 2 because we benefit from it more even than the Russians do. So then there's a pushback. Then we have yet another swing, you know, the Nord Stream 2 is in trouble. that Merkel is now going to go to the European Union, discuss European Union sanctions, and those sanctions, it would seem, are going to stop Nord Stream 2, and there's a reason why that might have been the agenda, which I'm going to talk about in a moment. In fact, an important reason. But now the very latest story that we're hearing is that, in fact, they thought about it again. There is no enthusiasm, it seems, on the part of other EU, big EU countries, for more sanctions of that nature on Russia anyway. And the result is that the talk of big, heavy sanctions on Russia, including sanctions on Nord Stream 2, is now receding. And we're back to token sanctions, you know, expelling diplomats, imposing individual sanctions on people, you know, officials, things which will have no real effect on anybody. And Nord Stream 2 is back on stream again. So it's a ding-dong story. It's clear that there's a massive tug of war going on in Germany. And it seems to me that the Germans themselves, deep down, are not really sure of the position and don't feel themselves to be on safe ground. So it's a complicated story. I hope I've explained it as clearly as I can. But that, I think, gives you the overall picture of where we are now. Now, I'm saying this on Sunday, the 13th of September. It could be that on Monday, the 14th of September, things will have changed again. But that seems to be the position at the moment.
Yeah, the story is changing fast, and stories are changing really, really fast. Just real quick, Alexander, let me throw in some recent news that I just pulled up right now regarding this mysterious person. According to Pravda, her name, pravda.ru, her name is Maria Pevchik. And the Kremlin was saying they tried to contact her, but now we're getting stories from her side of things where she says they never tried to contact me. Let me read you two titles real quick. One comes from Medusa, which is a Russian publication, but it's not pro-Kremlin. It's probably the other way around. But
it's very anti.
Yeah, they're reliable. I mean, they're a big publication.
They're interesting. They're an interesting publication, but we'll say a bit about them in a moment because they have an interest in this.
Yes. Yes. And they say, their title says, Russian police officials make false claims about anti-corruption foundation employee evading questioning. They're referring to Maria Pevchik here. And RT picked up the Medusa article, and they have a title saying, confusion reigns as Navalny associate accused of evading Russian police questioning says investigators never tried to contact her. So we are seeing two different narratives play out here. And there is video footage. I'll put a link for that video footage as well. Thank you to one of our viewers who sent me that video footage. Thank you very much. I'll put the video footage of what the Russian authorities say shows some foul play on this individual's part. Once again, it's hard to draw any conclusions at this moment. Alexander, what do you make of this?
Well, we're not going to draw any conclusions. And can I just repeat again what I often say in relation to these sort of cases? The presumption of innocence applies to everyone, and it absolutely must apply to Ms. Pevchik, who may be a completely innocent party in all of this. But first things to say, she is apparently connected with Mr. Hodorkovsky, who is this major league Russian oligarch who was jailed for many years in Russia for massive tax evasion charges, which were upheld, by the way, by the European Court of Human Rights. He is a passionate opponent of Putin's, and he is also, by the way, a major funder of Medusa. That is not to say that Medusa is not a very interesting and in some ways very revealing website. I mean, you know, it is a serious website, but you know, there is that connection. So we should bear that in mind. And Medusa is definitely anti-government, as Hodorkovsky is. Now, as I understand it about this person, and it is in fact possible to reconcile these stories, what the Russians are saying is not that this person, you know, dodge their stories. It is that she left the country and they couldn't contact her. So, you know, it may be that that's the entire issue here. All I will say is, if she is not evading their answers, their questions, then it's very simple. She contacts them and arranges to meet with them and speak to them. I mean, you know, there's no reason why we should create a whole, you know, circus around this story also. I got the impression, not that, you know, that they were alleging that she was, you know, that she was evading their questions. It's just that they couldn't find her. And the reason they couldn't find her is because she'd gone abroad. Now, if she's abroad, she can arrange from abroad, if she doesn't want to come back to Russia, to speak to Russian investigators wherever she is, whether it's in Germany or in Russia. Or she can refuse, and that's her right also. But one way or the other, we need clarity from her as much as we do from the Russians about this. I think it's possible to reconcile these two stories, and I don't think we should draw too many conclusions from this. And I certainly don't think that Medusa is right in saying that, you know, the Russian authorities were giving false stories there, because I didn't read them to say that she was actually evading anything. They just said that she'd gone, which is a different thing entirely. Now, let's put this aside now, the Navalny thing, and let's focus on Nord Stream 2, because there is an extraordinary twist at this Nord Stream 2 thing, which is a legal twist, which very, very seriously interests me. Now, on one of our live shows, I can't remember which one, but one of our viewers actually asked me whether, if Germany pulled out of Nord Stream 2, there would be any breach of contract issues. And I was skeptical. I take that completely back. It seems there would be massive commercial consequences if the Germans pulled out of Nord Stream 2. And the fact that Merkel, no less, has repeatedly insisted that it is a purely commercial project between Gazprom and various German companies, and that it wasn't really a political project or a geopolitical project at all, means that, from, you know, it's not a state issue. And if the Germany pulls out of Nord Stream 2, force majeure does not apply. So the German government at that point becomes commercially liable if it forces this decision, both to German businesses, but potentially to Gazprom also. And we're talking about many billions, I mean, at least $10 billion to German and Austrian and European companies, but also at least the same amount to Gazprom. And there's no obvious defense to there would be no obvious defense to this. So when I said that, you know, when I was saying that they were talking about looking for big sanctions from the EU, it seems that what Merkel was at least pondering was the possibility of getting the EU to impose sanctions on Russia, which would not only stop Nord Stream 2, but which would give Germany and German businesses and German companies legal protection from the kind of commercial claims that Gazprom might bring against them. And that would be an extraordinary step to take. I mean, that would be using sanctions. Remember, Germany doesn't have the right to impose sanctions itself, because all that has been delegated to the EU. So that would be using sanctions as a device to break commercial agreements. Now, that is a vast step. There was a very interesting article from a former Austrian foreign minister, which was actually published by RT, but I gather he's been very voluble in Austria also, saying that this would be a catastrophic thing to do. And he's a lawyer, by the way, a jurist. And I think he's absolutely right. And bear in mind, Nord Stream 2 is enormous, but of course, even bigger are the various deals with various Chinese companies. Germany is at the moment locked in to a discussion with China over Huawei. Remember, Britain and to some extent France have now pulled out of deals with which they did with Huawei, and those have been expensive, but Germany's got an even bigger deal apparently with Huawei. So it would be a shock right across the global system if that step was taken. It seems that many European countries have balked at taking it. And that may be one reason why Merkel is now swinging back to saying, well, perhaps Nord Stream 2, it's too late now. It must happen after all.
Yeah, we'll leave it there, Alexander. My two cents is now that Navalny is getting better, from what I understand, he's getting better, Merkel should just go forward with this and avoid all this nonsense. I mean, just seems like a simple solution.
Absolutely. I mean, it's the obvious solution, actually. The Germans can't back down without risk being completely humiliated. So go to the EU, get a few sanctions against a few Russian diplomats and officials, and then move on. That seems to me the most most obvious thing to do. I mean, if when you're in a hole, what did they say? Stop digging. I think the problem with Merkel, the reason she's got herself into this mess, to say something now about Merkel herself, is that obviously she's going to, well, it looks as if she will definitely step down as Chancellor next year. I think she's looking for another job. So she wants to be on the right side, if I can put it like that, of the Atlanticists, because all the plum jobs, you know, the big NGOs, the big things, the big international organizations are in their gift. So this is, I think, partly why we've had this wobble from her. But I think she should realize now that the damage to Germany would be too great to press on, and that it would also, I think, risk the stability of her very wobbly coalition if she pressed on with this. But, you know, Merkel is a strange person, and we'll just have to wait and see what she does.
All right, we'll continue to follow this story. Alexander Mercurius, thank you very much. Guys, if you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Hit that like, hit that share the article, and please drop us a comment as well. We really enjoy reading the comments you guys have on our stories, on our video posts, and please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Your donation helps out this small but growing channel, and look for our other two channels. Well, one channel is live, another one's going to be live very soon. The one that's going to be live very soon is going to be Alexander's channel. We will announce it when it goes live. Don't worry, we will make a big announcement for that as well. But you can also look for my channel, Alex Cristoforu, in the description box down below. All the channels are connected to this main channel, the Duran, so they're all going to feed into each other. Our goal is just to get more news out to you. That is our goal, to provide a service of just getting more news out to you. And another great service we provide is our merchandise. This is a UK magic mug from the Duran shop.
And here is mine, by the way.
And you also have a UK. I know you have a lot of other mugs there.
I have Australia, a very close friend of the UK's, by the way. And I've got the United States, the great English-speaking nation, which is so close to Britain in so many ways. And, of course, we've also got the two terrible twins, the countries that are at the moment battling each other and don't quite know how to sort things out. There's Russia and there's Germany. So there we go. So this is the subject that we're talking about. This is one of our smaller porcelain mugs with the Russian flag, and this is one of our great enamel mugs with the German flag. And we have, by the way, Alex has done massive work on our shop. There are thousands of new products there. I mean, all of them amazing, but we've got an extraordinary range of new mugs, magic mugs, the best mugs in the world with country flags. We've also got them both in porcelain, 15 ounce and 11 ounce. So we got our enamel mugs too. And we've got an amazing, vast ever-increasing range of shirts, long-sleeved, short-sleeved, embroidered with flags on. I mean, I think Alex is wearing one with the flag of Canada now. Polo shirts, T-shirts. I mean, it's just awesome how many amazing shirts and things there are. And there's also hoodies, amazing hoodies too. And we've got hats. We've got baseball hats and truckers hats and embroidered hats. And I mean, phenomenal things on our shop now. An amazing range of things. And of course, you support this channel by coming to the shop and buying those things. And you will sure to find, not just some things, but many things that you would want, because they're so wonderful, all of them. And don't forget also, by the way, our ebooks. So they're all on our shop. You support the Duran by going there. Keep an eye out for our channels. Obviously, Alex already has his up and running. Mine is coming very soon. So support the Duran by going to those. Also, they're all interconnected, as Alex said. And Alex will remind you quickly how to go to our shop and to buy the great things that are there.
You'll find the link to the Duran shop in the description box down below. Alexander Mercurius, thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.